Imagine the ultimate power source. It's a gigantic nuclear furnace, 93 million miles away from Earth, constantly smashing atoms together in a fiery explosion that has been burning for more than 4 billion years. Every single second, it unleashes an amount of energy that is millions of times greater than all the energy humanity has ever used in its entire history. This constant silent storm of power radiates out in all directions, a torrent of light and heat that travels across the vast, cold emptiness of space. Most of it is lost, speeding past us into the darkness. But a tiny, tiny fraction of that incredible energy strikes the surface of our planet every single day, bathing our world in a free, endless supply of power. For most of human history, all we could do was use it to warm our skin, grow our food, and tell the time of day. But then, we figured out how to do something that sounds like pure science fiction. We learned how to catch a sunbeam. Look around a modern neighborhood and you'll see them. Dark, sleek, rectangular panels sitting silently on rooftops or standing in fields, angled perfectly toward the sun. They are remarkably simple in their appearance. There are no moving parts, no spinning turbines, no noise, and no smoke. They just sit there, silently soaking up the daylight. Yet these motionless slabs of glass and silicon are performing one of the most incredible transformations imaginable. They are taking pure, intangible sunlight and, in an instant, converting it directly into electricity. The very same electricity that can power a light bulb, charge your phone, or run your entire house. It's a process that feels like magic, a direct line from a star to your screen. But how does it actually work? How does a simple, flat panel capture the energy of a sunbeam and turn it into usable power? Welcome back to How Does That Work? In today's episode, we're pulling back the curtain on one of the cleanest and most amazing sources of energy ever developed. We're going to explore the incredible science behind solar panels and answer that very question. How do you turn sunlight into electricity? This incredible technology that feels so modern actually has its roots in a discovery made way back in 1839. A young French physicist named Edmond Becquerel, who was only 19 years old at the time, was experimenting in his father's laboratory. He was working with two metal electrodes placed in a conductive solution, and he noticed something strange. When he exposed his setup to sunlight, a small electric voltage appeared between the two electrodes. He had just discovered the fundamental principle behind solar power, what we now call the photovoltaic effect. But at the time, it was just a scientific curiosity. No one knew what to do with it, and the effect he produced was far too weak to power anything. For nearly a century, it remained little more than a footnote in physics textbooks. The next giant leap forward didn't happen until the 1950s, at a legendary American research center called Bell Labs. This was a place where some of the 20th century's greatest inventions, like the transistor, were born. A team of scientists, Darrell Chapin, Calvin Fuller, and Gerald Pearson, were working with silicon, trying to find new ways to use it for electronics. They created the first truly practical solar cell by taking thin strips of silicon and doping them with impurities, creating the very same PN junction we talked about earlier. In 1954, they held a press conference and stunned the world with their invention. They showed how their new silicon solar cell, when hit by sunlight, could power a small toy Ferris wheel and a radio transmitter. It was the first time an artificial device could convert enough of the sun's energy to run an everyday electrical device. The modern solar panel was born. There was just one enormous problem. This new invention was unbelievably expensive to make. A single small solar cell cost hundreds of dollars, making it far too pricey for any normal application on Earth. But there was one place where cost was no object and power was a huge problem: outer space. In the late 1950s, the space race between the United States and the Soviet Union was just beginning. Engineers needed a way to power satellites for years on end without them running out of fuel. Solar panels were the perfect futuristic solution. In 1958, the US launched the Vanguard 1 satellite, a tiny grapefruit-sized sphere that had both conventional batteries and a small array of solar cells. The batteries died after about a week, but the solar cells continued to power the satellite's transmitter for over 6 years as it orbited the Earth. This incredible success proved how durable and reliable solar power could be, cementing its role as the go-to power source for the final frontier. For decades, solar power remained a technology mostly for space missions and other niche, expensive projects. The long journey from orbit to our rooftops was driven by a slow, steady, and global effort. The oil crisis of the 1970s sparked a huge wave of government investment into alternative energy, pushing scientists to find ways to make solar cells more efficient and cheaper. Over the years, researchers and manufacturers developed new techniques to produce purer silicon, cut thinner wafers, and streamline the assembly process. This gradual worldwide effort slowly but surely drove the price down, decade after decade. What started as a 19th century scientific curiosity and was then developed into a power source for satellites finally became affordable enough to bring the power of the sun down to Earth for everyone. To understand this process, we have to shrink ourselves down, way down, to the invisible world of atoms and electrons. At its heart, a solar panel is a very carefully constructed sandwich. And the main ingredient, the bread of this sandwich, is an element called silicon. Silicon is one of the most common elements on Earth. It's the main component of sand and quartz. But what makes it so special is that it's a semiconductor. This is the key to everything. To understand what that means, think of how electricity flows. In a material like a copper wire, which is a great conductor, the electrons are like hyperactive kids in a bouncy castle. They are free to jump and move all over the place. In a material like rubber, which is an insulator, the electrons are like kids forced to sit perfectly still in their chairs during a long, boring assembly. They are locked in place and can't move. A semiconductor like silicon is somewhere in the middle. The electrons are sitting in their chairs, but they aren't locked down. A little bit of energy, a little nudge, is all it takes to knock one of them loose and get it moving. Now, a slab of pure silicon on its own is pretty boring. It doesn't do much. The real genius of a solar panel comes from a process called doping. This doesn't mean doing anything illegal. It just means that scientists intentionally add tiny, microscopic amounts of other elements as impurities into the silicon to change its electrical properties. They create two different flavors of silicon that will become the two slices of bread in our sandwich. The first slice is called N-type silicon. To make it, they add an element like phosphorus. Phosphorus atoms have one more electron in their outer shell than silicon atoms do. When you mix them in, these extra electrons don't have a place to sit. They become free-roaming electrons, like extra people at a concert with no assigned seats, just wandering the aisles looking for a spot. Because electrons have a negative charge, this layer is called N-type for negative. The other slice of bread is called P-type silicon. To make this, scientists add an element like boron, which has one fewer electron than silicon. This creates the opposite situation. Sprinkling boron into the silicon creates tiny empty spots where an electron should be. These spots are called holes, and they act like a positive charge. You can think of this P-type layer as a room full of chairs, but with a few of them being empty. This layer is called P-type for positive. So now our stage is set. We have two very special slices of silicon. One N-type slice that is full of extra, free-moving electrons looking for a home, and one P-type slice that is full of empty holes just waiting to be filled. The real magic happens when you press these two different types of silicon together. The moment they touch, a frenzy of activity happens at the border. All those free electrons on the N-type side see the empty holes on the P-type side, and they immediately jump across the border to fill them up. But this migration only happens in a very thin layer, right at the junction. After that first rush, the movement stops, because that little zone at the border has now become electrically balanced. But in the process, this shuffling of electrons has created something incredibly important. A permanent one-way electric field across that border, which we call the PN junction. Think of this field as a perfectly designed one-way slide for electrons. Any electron that finds itself on the P-type side of the slide will be instantly pushed across to the N-type side. It can't go the other way. This simple, silent, and invisible slide, built right into the material itself, is the entire engine of a solar panel. It's a machine with no moving parts, just waiting for a source of energy to start pushing some electrons toward the top of the slide. Now that our stage is set with this special silicon sandwich and its built-in one-way electronic slide, let's introduce the final and most important ingredient, the sun. Sunlight might look like a uniform, gentle glow, but it's actually a high-speed stream of countless tiny individual packets of energy called photons. You can think of photons as microscopic energy bullets constantly raining down from the sun. When a solar panel is sitting in the daylight, it is being bombarded by trillions upon trillions of these photons every single second. Most of them will just bounce off or pass right through. But every so often, one of these photons will score a direct hit on a silicon atom right near that critical p-n junction. This is the moment of creation. The photon, carrying energy from the sun, slams into the atom and transfers all of its energy to it. It's like a cue ball in a game of pool striking another ball perfectly. If the photon has enough energy, it will knock one of the silicon atom's electrons right out of its comfortable spot, sending it free. This is the photo part of the term photovoltaic effect. Photo, meaning light, has just created a moving electron. And when the electron is knocked loose, it leaves behind an empty spot, one of those holes we talked about. So now, thanks to a single sunbeam, we have a newly created pair, a free electron and a lonely hole. This is where that invisible, one-way slide we built, the electric field at the p-n junction, springs into action. It immediately sees this newly freed electron and, because of its charge, it grabs it and sweeps it over to the n-type side of the sandwich. The electron is now trapped on the n side, separated from the hole it left behind on the p side. That electron desperately wants to get back to that empty hole. It's a fundamental rule of nature. Opposite charges attract, but the electric field at the junction acts as a strict gatekeeper, a one-way turnstile. It will not let the electron go back across the border. So as the sun continues to shine, more and more photons strike the silicon, knocking more and more electrons loose, and the electric field diligently keeps sorting them, pushing all the free electrons onto the N side. This creates a powerful imbalance. The N-type side of our silicon sandwich becomes crowded with extra negative electrons, while the P-type side becomes filled with positive holes. This separation of charges creates an electrical pressure, which we call voltage. All these electrons are piled up on one side, desperate to find a path back to the other. And this is where we finally step in to complete the circuit. By placing thin metal contacts on the top and bottom of the silicon sandwich and connecting them with a wire, we give the electrons the path they've been looking for. They see this new highway, and they start to flow, rushing from the N side through the wire to get back to the P side and finally recombine with a hole. This organized, continuous flow of electrons through a wire is what we call an electric current. And along its journey, we can make that current do work for us, like lighting up a light bulb, spinning a motor, or charging a battery before it completes its trip. To make it even simpler, imagine a water park. The P-type silicon is the big, relaxing swimming pool at the bottom. The N-type silicon is the platform at the very top of a tall water slide. The electrons are the kids in the pool. The P-N junction, that one-way electric field, is the park attendant whose only job is to lift kids out of the pool and put them on the platform at the top of the slide. And the sunlight, the photons, is the energy the attendant uses to do the lifting. As long as the sun is shining, the attendant is constantly lifting kids, electrons, out of the pool, the P side, and placing them on the high platform, the N side. These kids want to get back to the pool, but the attendant won't let them climb back down the ladder. The only way back is to go down the fun part, the big winding water slide. That slide is the wire we connect. The flow of kids down the slide is the electric current, and on their way down, they can turn a pinwheel or splash a friend. That's the work being done. As long as the sun shines, the process continues, creating a constant, silent, and clean flow of energy. That water park is a great way to understand how a single solar cell makes an electric current. But there's a catch. An individual solar cell on its own is actually quite weak. It only produces about half a volt of electrical pressure. To put that in perspective, a single AA battery is 1.5 volts. So one lonely solar cell doesn't have nearly enough oomph to do any serious work. It's like a single person whispering. You can't hear them from across the room. To get a message across, you need a whole choir singing together. In the world of solar power, a solar panel is that choir. A solar panel is essentially a team of dozens of individual solar cells, all working together in perfect harmony to produce a useful amount of power. The main goal is to take that tiny half volt from each cell and add it all up to create a much higher, more powerful voltage. To do this, engineers wire the cells together in a series. The best way to understand this is to think about the batteries in a TV remote or a flashlight. You don't just toss them in randomly, you have to stack them end to end, connecting the positive terminal of one battery to the negative terminal of the next. When you do this, their voltages add up. Two 1.5-volt batteries stacked together give you 3 volts. Solar panels do the exact same thing. The individual cells are laid out in a grid and then soldered together in long strings, with the positive side of one cell connected to the negative side of another cell, side of the next, and so on down the line. If you have a string of 60 cells, and each one is producing half a volt, you're no longer dealing with a tiny voltage. You now have a much more useful 30 volts of electrical pressure coming from that single string. It's this process of linking cells in a series that turns the tiny whisper of each individual cell into a powerful collective voice. Once these strings of cells are all wired up, they have to be protected from the outside world. The fragile, connected cells are carefully arranged and then laminated, or sealed, between a durable back sheet and a sheet of tough, tempered glass on the front. This whole sandwich is then put into a rigid aluminum frame. This is what makes a solar panel so tough and allows it to sit on a roof for 25 years, surviving everything from hail and snow to blistering heat. Finally, on the back of the panel, all the wiring comes together in a small waterproof box called a junction box, which is where the two final cables, one positive and one negative, come out, ready to deliver all that harnessed solar power to the outside world. So now we have this amazing, fully assembled solar panel sitting on a roof with its positive and negative cables coming out of the junction box, ready to deliver clean, sun-powered energy. But there's a huge problem, a critical missing link in the chain. The electricity coming from that panel speaks a completely different language than the electricity your house understands. To get them to work together, we need a translator. This is where the unsung hero of every solar power system comes in, a device called the inverter. To understand what an inverter does, you first have to know that there are two main types of electricity. The electricity that solar panels and batteries produce is called direct current, or DC. The best way to picture DC is to think of a river. The water flows steadily and consistently in only one direction. That's DC, a smooth one-way flow of electrons from negative to positive. It's simple and effective for many electronics, but it's not what powers our homes. The electricity that comes out of the outlets in your wall is called alternating current, or AC. AC is completely different. Instead of a steady one-way river, AC is like the tide at the beach. The electrons rapidly flow one way, then stop, and then flow the opposite way, constantly alternating their direction back and forth, usually about 60 times every second. This is the standard for power grids all over the world because it's much easier to transport over long distances. So we have a mismatch. The solar panels are producing a steady DC river, but your house and all your appliances are designed to run on the back and forth AC tide. This is the inverter's one critical job. It's the master translator for electricity. The DC power from the solar panels flows into the inverter, which, through a series of sophisticated and incredibly fast electronic switches, essentially chops up that smooth one-way current. It flips the current's direction back and forth at a precise rhythm, transforming the steady DC river into the perfect oscillating AC tide that your home can use. It's an act of high-speed electrical choreography, ensuring the power generated on your roof is perfectly in sync with the power from the main electrical grid. But modern inverters are much more than just simple translators. They're really the brains of the entire solar power system. They constantly monitor the electrical output of the solar panels to make sure they're operating at their peak performance. They also act as a crucial safety device. If the power grid in your neighborhood goes down, the inverter will instantly shut off your solar panels to make sure they don't send electricity out into the lines, which could be incredibly dangerous for utility workers trying to make repairs. Without this brilliant and hard-working device, All the solar energy you capture would be trapped in the panels, unable to power a single light bulb in your house. We've followed the entire journey, from a sunbeam crossing 93 million miles of space to a useful stream of AC power flowing into a house. But this entire incredible process relies on one thing, the sun. So it raises the most obvious and important question of all. What happens when the sun sets? How does a house with solar panels still have power at night, or on a dark and stormy day when the panels aren't producing anything? The answer lies in two different but equally clever solutions: using the grid as a giant battery, or having a battery of your very own. For most homes with solar panels, the answer is that they are still connected to the main electrical grid. Think of the entire grid as a giant shared swimming pool of electricity. On a sunny afternoon, your solar panels are often producing far more power than your house is actually using. All that extra, unused power doesn't go to waste. Instead, your inverter directs it out of your house and into the grid, adding your clean energy to that giant, shared pool for your neighbors to use. Your electric meter, which normally spins forward as you use electricity, will actually spin backward. You are literally selling your power to the utility company. This process is called net metering. For every kilowatt of power you send out to the grid, you get a credit. Then, at night, when your panels are dormant, you simply draw power back from the grid, just like a normal house. Your meter starts spinning forward again, using up the credits you earned during the day. The goal of a well-designed solar system is that over the course of a whole year, the amount of energy you've sold back to the grid is equal to the amount you've bought back at night. In this system, you're not using the grid for power, so much as you are using it as a massive, 100% efficient battery to store the value of the energy you create. The second, and increasingly popular, solution is to store the energy yourself. This is done with a large home battery system. Think of it as your own personal private energy reservoir. During the day, when your panels are generating extra power, instead of sending it all to the grid, your system's smart controller uses a portion of that power to charge up your home battery. It's like filling up a water tank while the sun is high in the sky. Then, when the sun goes down and the panels stop producing, the house doesn't have to pull power from the grid. Instead, it automatically switches over and starts drawing its power from your fully charged battery. The house runs on its own stored solar energy all night long. The biggest advantage of this setup is energy independence. If a storm knocks out the power in your neighborhood, a house that just uses net metering will go dark along with everyone else. But a house with a battery system becomes its own self-sufficient energy island, keeping the lights on with the sunlight it saved from the day before. These two solutions, the grid and the battery, are what finally solve the age-old problem of the sun not shining at night, turning solar power into a true 24/7 energy source. So with this entire incredible system in place, it seems like solar power is a near-perfect source of energy. But that leads to another question. If the sun is bombarding the Earth with so much power, why does a typical solar panel on a roof only convert about 20% of the sunlight that hits it into electricity? Why isn't it 100% efficient? The answer lies in a fundamental limitation of the silicon itself, a kind of Goldilocks problem. The silicon in a solar cell is tuned to be knocked over by a photon with a specific just right amount of energy. The sunlight that reaches Earth is made up of photons with a whole spectrum of different energy levels. Some photons, like those in the infrared spectrum, have a very low amount of energy. When they hit the solar cell, it's like trying to knock over a heavy bowling pin by flicking a pea at it. They simply don't have enough energy to knock an electron loose, so their energy is wasted. On the other end, some photons, like those in the ultraviolet spectrum, have way too much energy. They hit the silicon like a cannonball. They easily knock an electron loose, but all their extra leftover energy is just converted into waste heat, which actually makes the panel slightly less efficient. Only the photons in that just right band of energy can be converted effectively. When you combine this with other small losses, like light reflecting off the glass or electrical resistance, you end up with the efficiencies we see today. But scientists and engineers around the world are in a constant race to push past these limits, and the future of solar technology is incredibly exciting. One of the most promising new materials is a type of crystal called a perovskite. Perovskites are a kind of wonder material for solar energy. They are fantastic at absorbing light, can be made incredibly thin and flexible, and can even be dissolved into a liquid to create a solar ink that could be sprayed or printed onto surfaces. One of the most exciting ideas is to create tandem cells, where a super thin, semi-transparent layer of perovskite is placed directly on top of a traditional silicon cell. The perovskite layer would capture the high energy light, and the silicon layer below would capture the lower energy light that passes through, allowing a single panel to harvest much more of the sun's total spectrum and potentially pushing efficiencies way past 30%. This innovation is opening up a future where solar power isn't just limited to bulky panels on a roof. Researchers are developing transparent solar cells that look and feel just like glass, which could one day turn every window in a skyscraper into a power-generating surface. Others are creating flexible fabric-like solar cells that could be woven into backpacks to charge your devices while you hike, or even integrated directly into the body of an electric car, constantly trickle charging the battery wherever it's parked in the sun. The story of solar power is far from over. What began as a scientific curiosity became a tool for space exploration and then transformed into a rooftop power plant is now on the verge of becoming seamlessly and invisibly integrated into the world all around us.